Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Happy mid of Mindful March, everyone. I hope that everyone has not only been enjoying a start of a new month, a new week, and new opportunities, but also the ability to reach new goals, find out new purposes in our everyday challenges, and most importantly, build a better self. Well, to provide a continuing of our powerful Mindful March awareness, as always, we are having such an inspiring guest. For our show tonight, our guest is Rebecca Taskin. Rebecca is a licensed New York City-based speech and language pathologist, speech therapist, with background in neuroscience. Her research was focused on attention, memory, and cognition. She also assists children from the ages 5 to 21 with severe traumatic brain injuries. Her clients have a variety of brain-based language and communication disorders, including dyslexia, stuttering, cerebral palsy, and different genetic and seizure disorders. Rebecca also specializes in AAC, which stands for Augmentative and Alternative Communication, which she will explain more about, I'm sure. She has extensive experience with PRC and Tobii Dynoxin products, as well as many types of software. She has developed and implemented tangible symbols for children with visual impairments, including blindness, CVI, which is cortical visual impairment. She has also evaluated many children for different types of speech-generating devices, access, and, of course, treatment plans. So I hope everyone's got a very comfortable seat, a pen and pad if they want to take notes, or is just in a very good mindset environment so that way they can relax, stay focused, and get some inspirational guidance. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi.
Hey, Rebecca, thank you for taking so much out of your busy schedule, especially with the time frame of being a guest on tonight's show.
Of course. I'm so happy to be on Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Hey, I know. There are no coincidences. And you heard me give us some brief information about your amazing task. If you don't mind, let's share a little bit more information about you.
Of course, yeah. A lot of what you have already covered is really more or less what I do on a day-to-day basis. I treat children ages 5 to 21 with severe traumatic brain injury, and I incorporate strategies for them to help them communicate after accidents. And I work with their family members and team and providers to create communication plans for them so they could have an outlet to communicate.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Not only that's amazing, your line of work and the passion behind it, but of course also with the different areas of communication, not only for brain injuries, but just for general, because let's be honest, communication is key.
Correct. Yeah. Across the different areas of communication, I work with kids who don't use verbal speech at all. I work with kids who have speech but may have more language disabilities, expressing themselves, comprehension. So it's really a gamut of different speech and language disorders I work with.
That is very helpful. And as I'm sure you're aware with this, and especially with your line of work, how that is never going to fade to where it's not well needed is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, totally. We have We have we have a very extensive population that we work with.
You know, and with your line of work, and especially the assistance that you help with, not only the children that I was reading about, but also with, of course, you know, brain injuries, I would say that you're technically, it's like advocacy, correct?
Yeah, I think a lot of what I do and a lot of kind of the guidelines for speech pathologists who do work with people who have had brain injury is advocacy. And we really help, like, push a lot of what we think are useful and meaningful communication tools through Medicare and different insurance companies, and advocate to the state and our and all our representatives for what we really think should happen after brain injury and incidents. We are really, like, advocating for our patients. So
that is very, very helpful, not only, of course, while they're patients, but most importantly after.
Yeah, totally. I've really learned a lot as a speech pathologist. I thought I was just going to go into this, you know, just kind of treating children and getting kind of things handed to me. And really, I've learned that it's, you really have to put your feet in the ground and figure out what's important to you and really go in and work and advocate for those areas. Because, you know, really the bottom line is, like, as you know, with this, your project that you're working on too, like, awareness is key, and people understanding, like, the value and the importance of this is really what helps create change. So,
100%. And let's be honest, especially, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, that the awareness is not just once you sustain the injury, or of course post TBI, or any brain injury, not just TBI, even though they all have the same meaning, but it's a nonstop thrive that really needs to continue to get more and more attention span. And I honestly don't think there's ever going to be enough directed towards this way to really make a powerful difference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really impressed with all the charities that I've seen, and, like, all of the different nonprofits who have stepped up and really tried to promote, like, different advocacies and outlets for families and those who have had different brain injuries. Because it's powerful, and, like, the source of all that is really people who have had these experiences themselves and or firsthand have seen them, like a speech pathologist or different types of providers or a friend or a neighbor or whatever. And I've really seen that a lot. And a lot of the kids I work with have such a strong community behind them, and they're always doing fundraisers and promoting like them and their well-being. And it's just so nice to see that.
I agree. It's very nice, and it's unfortunate how the process takes place, is because they have either personally been affected by it or a loved one was, but at least it shows that even when the outcome is unfolded the improper way, that there still is a positive perspective that can be located. Obviously, sometimes we have to look harder, but support is a very valuable thing.
Totally, and it's also advocating for those who may be at risk for a TBI. Looking at different populations. Yeah, and, like, creating, working on research and development. And, you know, one thing that I've really thought was interesting is that, you know, growing up, I used to go, let's say, skiing to the mountains, and, you know, no one wore helmets. Now you almost look, like, you almost look poorly upon if you're not wearing a helmet, because everyone knows, like, why would you be, you know? So,
yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely been some changes this. Yeah, it's been some powerful changes. I mean, and there's definitely, obviously, let's be honest, it's not even close to being halfway there, the changes. But we've all seen, I want to say, since 2016 when the movie Concussion was released on Super Bowl Sunday about CTE and Dr. Ben Amalia, that definitely, obviously, there was a lot of downfoot on that, and thinking it was only towards football, targeting only some sport, but it's really had a very powerful ripple effect in continuing study, not only about the importance of brain safety, how helmets only do a certain amount of coverage, but also how that they can happen anywhere, anytime, and to anyone, which I'm sure you're well aware of.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the kids I treat, their brain injuries are a result of all different types of accidents, and it's, like, really promoting awareness of that. And those type of accidents and creating community around it. And I think that's, you know, a lot of it just stems, unfortunately, from a result of injury. However, it is our job to really advocate for them and to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else. So
exactly, you know, and with that not happening, you know, and with your line of work, you know, not only prevention, but also, you know, during when they're patients and also post TBI, what are some of the powerful roles that you have partaken in?
Totally, yeah. So typically, you know, there's speech pathologists are seen in the hospital, in a rehab setting, either inpatient, outpatient, nursing home, assistive care. A lot of speech pathologists are in schools, clinics. I go to houses also. I treat children at home who have brain injuries,
wow,
who are so medically fragile and they can't go into school. So we really look, our role really is quite large when it comes to addressing TBI. We look at hearing loss, speech loss, verbal speech, maybe it's changes in speech. If you have a disfluency, maybe there's a stutter that started. Language in terms of your comprehension, your ability to express, depending on where the brain injury was, we can kind of use our deductive reasoning skills based on a lot of our language understanding and figure out exactly what area might have been affected and how we could use our clinical knowledge and insights to really treat that type of language loss.
Wow.
We look at cognitive communication, our interactions with others. Difficulties with swallowing, we know that the brain is very close to the throat. So typically all the kids I work with also have secondary to their brain injury. They have a swallowing disorder wherein they may have difficulties breaking down food, transporting food, clearing food out of their mouth, which could result in aspiration if they're not on the correct diet. Respiratory difficulties, so looking at their speech rate with their breath rate, and then maybe a voice. So is their voice clear? Is it loud? Is it, you know,
right,
what's going on with their voice? So we look at all of those different things when we're screening for brain injury or after a brain injury occurs, just to kind of assess where the person is at and then start to make a treatment plan from there. And that happens pretty quickly. And those assessments and those reports have to be very dynamic because we know with brain injury, there's so much spontaneous recovery and regression that we really have to be very fluid with our thinking and really come and create a whole picture of how the person is day to day. So it's really, I think for us, it's important that we have consistent relationships with our patients, which is why we probably, those speech pathologists who do treat brain injury are such advocates, because we see every day the ins and outs of this for the patient and the family. So
That's what I was just about to ask. Not only is it amazing, this concept, but I was just about to ask, and you kind of brought that up, you know, not only when you're counseling, obviously, the individuals with the brain injuries, but also I was going to ask, you know, what methods or techniques or even steps do you also assist with the survivor's families or friends or, you know, just depending on how their caregiver situation is really unfolding?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interdisciplinary team approach. So it's not just a speech pathologist who's speaking with the family. It could be their occupational therapist, their doctors, their physical therapists, their nurses. So we all kind of like work together to create a plan for what we think will be the projected outcome the next time frame, whether that be post-accident, 6 months, year goals, and work together and then kind of go over with the family, what are your expectations of this, you know, this person, and ask maybe if the person is able to speak, what are your expectations of yourself? And then we kind of all create a plan and set up goals. And like, I think the most important thing I really strive for is patient advocacy. So if my patient doesn't want a certain goal, or if they are not interested in using some kind of augmentative device to talk, like, those are all psychosocial factors that we have to take into consideration. And a lot of that has to do with their ability and their desire to, you know, want these things for themselves. Like, there's as much, we only can be so much of an advocate without our patients being advocates themselves. And I think a lot of that really for me has to do with education and showing them like what the outcomes could be.
Oh, exactly.
So,
education
yeah.
is a very valuable step, not only, of course, in any setting in life, but I think definitely being a survivor myself, that is very important, because we do have to relearn. But also, when I'm covering the term relearn, is not only the educational value, it's also the life setting. And let's be honest, with all survivors, I'm sorry, it takes different steps, different outcomes, but I think it's definitely each one gets the correct amount, and some do get more of this, but what I'm referring to is supervision, evaluation, and of course, you know, the appropriate testimonies, depending on not only how their recovering process begins, I think, but also depending on what area of the brain is damaged.
Oh, yeah, totally, and the severity of the damage. When you had your accident, what strategies did you use to help you communicate, or were you able to, like, use verbal speech right away? How did that work for you?
I wasn't able to use verbal speech right away. It was not a long road. It was just continuing, just because when my accident took place, my whole face broke, but my bone did not shift. They were just extremely fractured, so it stayed still. But it was very difficult for me to open my jaw, not only to eat, so they fed me through the trach, but also the concept of just being able to move my mouth up and down. So it was, I could speak, but it was very low key, not even to an extent if you paid attention, but if not. And then it drastically got to where, just like you've experienced within the format of, and I'm sure all our caregivers out there and those listening as survivors, there are different steps to where after a while it unfolds properly. Practice makes perfect is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And did you use any alternative communication systems while you were in recovery? Or did you really just rely on those minimal speech sounds you had?
No, I definitely use different forms of communication. It was not only during certain rehabilitation stages, like at Tier Memorial Hermann, obviously that was just getting everything unfolding, adapting, and trying to understand. Then when I went to CNS, Center for Neuroskills, it was more of OT, PT, education, memorization, math, stuff like that, writing. But it was so there was different forms of communication. It would be verbal, language, tones, writing, either handwriting, do it on the computer. I mean, just basically any form of communication, but it definitely, and I'm sure you're aware of this with, you know, your format and your career path is obviously the more you continue to do it, it's going to unfold at a different angle. Obviously practice makes perfect. It's not going to be right off bat. And I'm sure you've had a lot of survivors and or caregivers, family members, you name it, get frustrated with not moving fast enough. In any case, we all do. It's natural. But you just got to keep trying.
Oh, my gosh. And honestly, sometimes I have to catch myself because I'm always thinking everything needs to go fast, fast, fast. And I think that's actually one of my downfalls because I really want the kids I'm working with to get competent on these devices and be able to communicate and, like, develop language systems for them, because a lot of the kids I work with don't use verbal speech. So we have to come up with different types of mechanisms to help them communicate. And what I was kind of getting at with you is what you were telling me is you've used different types of augmentative communication technologies. We call this AAC in the speech world. And with AAC, there's three different types. There's no tech, which is like pointing, looking, low tech, which might be writing, and then like high tech, which is using speech generating devices. So basically from a very early on stage, we really want to implement these types of technology these types of communication systems for those who have just had some sort of brain injury to those who may need it to support their communication and facilitate it later on. So in the hospital setting, you might see something called like an ETRAM board. I don't know if you've seen one of those, but there are clear boards with different picture symbols on them. And that way the patient can kind of look around the board while the communication partner is there holding the board up for them, so they can kind of express to them what their needs and wants are. We've seen a lot of those in the hospital setting, especially for older adults. With kids, you don't necessarily see so many words. They might see more pictures. They might see, you know, bathroom, thirsty, suction me, I need help, something like that with picture symbols. But for adults, you might see more words. But it really just depends on the condition. And those are something that's like a form of augmentative communication.
Right. Wow. And I'll be honest with you, not when you described that, I thought I had seen one, and I'm pretty sure I have, but I used to always wonder, what is that for? And I didn't want to go ask, especially when you have a brain injury, be like, oh yeah, you don't need to be asking what stuff's for. But that's amazing, that concept. And not only that, but the different forms of communication, obviously. And I did all those, the low, the high, and what was the third one?
No technology at all.
No
so
tech. Yeah,
maybe,
right, yeah.
Yeah. So like, let's say you were laying in the bed and you were looking at what you want or looking towards what you want. We would say that's no tech. So you might be using your facial features, your eye gaze, vocalizations, verbalization, your body language, grimaces, for pain, things like that. That would be like a no-tech augmentative communication where, you know, it's body language. How do people look?
Exactly,
what are
yeah.
they doing? Yeah. We all
yeah, body language is very powerful.
We all use that form of augmentative communication. And it's all the whole premise of alternative and augmentative and alternative communication is to for people to understand our communication without us actually needing to use verbal speech ourselves to communicate. So you'll see like lots of different forms of it, and it's very well thought out and really interesting field to be in terms of being a speech pathologist, to be focused so much on augmentative communication, because there are so many types of systems and so many areas of it that I'm constantly learning myself.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's just the concept, but and that not only I'm sure with this department, but let's be honest, that's a concept with any area of knowledge, because learning is power, knowledge is power. You think if everyone knew everything, there would be no continuing updates, no different perspectives. It would be, this is it, take it or leave it.
Yeah, totally. And like there has been throughout like our lifetime, there's been so many different assistive technology. There was the Assistive Technology Act in 2004, which really helped promote federal funding to help with these alternative communication devices for people who may need them to communicate. There's new guidelines by Medicare Part B. Now you can actually take home your trial devices if you're in a nursing home or skilled nursing facility, if that trial is going successfully and your speech pathologist finds that you're doing a really good job with it. And these are just like the little nuances of things that we need to keep up to date on so we can make sure our patients are getting the best services possible. So yeah, you're right. It is a lot of learning.
It is, I'm sure. Now, and speaking of learning, and it's not applying just to this concept, but, you know, with the different age brackets that you have assisted in, the families that you have met, you know, what is something that you recommend that families could do, obviously different formats of speech technologies, but that you recommend that they could do at home that can help them with anything, you know, with hearing, speech, language, cognitive communication, swallowing, respiratory, I mean, voice, and there's so many different options, but I just want to know what is something that you recommend that they could easily start to begin this process at home.
I think that's a very hard question to answer, but I think it really depends on the goals of the person who is in treatment. And I honestly think it's important to stick to the goals that the speech pathologist provides, because especially like when we talk about rushing with feeding and swallowing, you really need to stick to protocols. What I see with a lot is that patients don't comply with the feeding and swallowing protocols, and that could lead to aspiration pneumonia, which, as we know, is one of the number one causes of death in the hospital.
Ooh, yeah.
And we really need to be careful to follow all those protocols. But in terms of like what we can do is we can be active communication partners, and and this took me a little bit to understand that knowing the people around us, knowing the patients around us, knowing the family around us. We know when people are uncomfortable, upset, afraid, angry. You know, we know what feelings are going on with those people. We have intuition. So it's letting them find a way to access those emotions, whether that be providing them a flip chart of, like, things they want to talk about or you know, giving them some kind of tool to get their words out. Like, you had very minimal speech. So in your example, I might say to you, you know, James really needs an Etran board so he can look around the room. One of my friends recently, mm-hmm. she made this amazing contraption. She put a little laser pointer and popped out the lenses of sunglasses for one of her patients. And on the wall of his room, she had put all of the words, that his most common words and phrases that he wants to say, so he could use the laser pointer to kind of explain to her what was going on, how he was feeling,
so he
could advocate for himself, right?
Wow.
So how
That's
much
very
faster
impressive.
Would have that been for you, right, than
yeah,
versus trying
definitely.
To get out little words at a time?
Yeah,
so, yeah, I
think go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I just think it's adapting the environment then, instead of trying to make the person adapt to the environment.
100%, and I think that's very not only interesting, but I think that also it's very helpful, because during the process, as you know, with your angle, it's you're needed to take place a certain way to make sure that the brain can function properly and get you back into the normal routine, even though the word normal is overrated, but get it back into the routine nonetheless. But by adapting it, what she did, wow, that's very interesting, and I think that is extremely helpful. And they're seeing, I'm sure, much, much, much positive results. It's not like, it's not making sense. It's showing that, okay, if you cannot perform this task, let's show mm-hmm. us what you can do. Does this make it easier for you? So, and like you stated, it shows that it's adapting to you, not you adapting to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that a good, well-trained speech pathologist kind of understands that too, because it's not, with brain injury, it's not putting a square peg into a square hole. It's really figuring
exactly.
out what, you know, it's figuring out the patient and the person and what they, who they are, who they came from, and what their needs are, which is why I actually think that treating and working with this population is, I'm so passionate about, because I think it is so complex and there are so many avenues and things that we're always thinking about and monitoring. Just an example, I had a student that I was working with who used to have verbal speech prior to a seizure, and mother reported that he used to say full sentences and like all these different things. And what we did is we created a language system for him that really encompassed him as a person. He liked basketball. He liked aliens. He liked dinosaurs. And this kid had no verbal expression or way to say it. So we made sure that his language system that we created for him was robust and full of all the things that he loved. So it's important that we're really tailoring the environment and the things that we are promoting that like really mirror and mimic what the person wants, not just like what we want or what we think is a standard protocol. You know, it's customizing everything for them. So
exactly, you know, and that's what's very obvious thing about this, and it's very beneficial once again, not only for the individual, whatever their really state of mind is at that time and place, but I think it's also very beneficial how, and I know you'll agree with this, a lot of individuals, and this is well known, it's been a continuous cycle for decades, that when they have one brain injury, they think that the rest will follow and be in the same, fall in the same category of results, especially mm-hmm. if it's the same brain damage. But that's what individuals are, obviously some starting to understand, but I mean, when I say that, it's very briefly, it's not really putting a big mark in it, that is, there's an understanding. It's like they assume that, though, once again, they're all the same, but let's be honest. When you meet one brain injury, that's just one brain injury. No matter if there's mm-hmm. similarities of how it was obtained, it could be the same side of the brain. It's mm-hmm. going to be completely black and white. There are no similarities in brain injuries, honestly.
Definitely not. And that's why it's really hard to assess, not assess, but create a prognosis for treatment, for because you never, it's so, everything is so different. We're really basing our knowledge on prior experiences, but we really can't put a overall arching blanket on this is what's going to happen at X, Y, and Z time frame. But we
exactly
do
you
can
with,
yeah.
But I think, unlike you were saying, when you're doing the best you can, obviously, let's be honest, that's very very, very successful because you still have a format. I mean, that's one thing that's it's at least beneficial with the, even though the misunderstanding of brain injuries in all aspects, because they're all different, but at least having some sort of a program to a guide, if you will, to follow to where they all can categorize differently, but yet they'll all have somewhat of a similar result. And all that's doing is at least getting it on stepping stones to where then it can function in their own personal environment more properly instead of, okay, yeah, you're just going to go straight home and then we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, no. Oh my gosh. No, no, no. And like a lot of the treatments and goals we create could be temporary. You know, they could be like those stepping stops into like something bigger and bigger. And it's important that we are there along the way. And I think, you know, people a lot of times don't really understand what speech pathologists do. I think a lot of we get the stigmatism of, you know, they treated my R when I was 5 or a kid in my class with a stutter and saw a speech pathologist. But we're really, really looking at the language development of those who, you know, may have an impaired language system and recreating and helping them recreate a system for them that works and that's meaningful to them and their life. So, yeah, I agree with everything you say. And just to kind of like bring it back with this whole AAC topic, I really try to assess the person I'm working with at the time and create a plan for them that I think works best for them at that moment in time. And it's important that the family's really involved in that too, because they're going to be the ones that are going to be the communication partners. So you might have the communicator. So usually I use the terminology, the communicator and the communication partner. So the communication partner also needs to be trained on how to, you know, assess the AAC. So if for someone who, let's say, had no movement in the hospital, we might create some sort of partner-assisted scanning technique wherein we kind of give them the same 10 overarching categories listed in a row that this communication partner will kind of give to them based off of a spreadsheet or some kind of sheet that we all create together. And then that person, the communicator, may indicate yes or smile or something to say, that's what I want. That's the one I want. Like the categories could be like, I have something to say. I want to meet someone. I need help. I'm hungry. And so it's training both sides of the parties to really help facilitate that communication and like build strategies at home and at the hospital. So there's all types of AAC. And I think it's really, really important, especially for those who are interested in brain injury and interested in brain injury advocacy, to know a lot about augmentative and alternative communication. Yeah. It's so important.
And I think it's very good. It is. It's very important. I agree also with the statements about the AAC that you described and how, you know, with the ability, not only having two different sides of it to make it a whole, but also how, you know, when you have the correct understanding of communication, and let's be honest, there's even without a brain injury, there's so many different forms of communication that all of us are get confused with or think we know, and then someone can give a different perspective. But when you have with the brain injury, someone that has taken the proper understanding with your AAC format, I think it actually helps not only a survivor feel the ability to be more freely open with ideas, thoughts, and feelings, but it also has the listeners be able to access their wording and be on the same page with a positive attitude towards the outcome instead of, I'm kind of not motivated by this communication. There's too much of a difference, if that makes sense.
And isn't it the worst when people talk for you?
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And then assume everything about you. So we're really looking to create with alternative, with augmentative alternative communication. We're really looking at how can we get this person to make choices for themselves. Even if it's just us reading choices to them and them telling us yes, we want them to be able to have advocacy for themselves because we need to feel motivated to communicate and we need to feel like people hear us. Isn't that like all we want in life? You know,
it is. It's all we want. And when you have the ability for that to properly work, let's be honest, that helps the individual not only feel more confident about himself, about him or his self, but also they have dedication to really move forward and, most importantly, understand and make the move with their own personal decision-making instead of relying on someone else to finish the sentence for them or finish the action or in anything, relying on someone to make the final step.
Oh, totally. And the thing is, like, this could be a very long process. Sometimes I have students that I give maybe a 30-second to 2-minute timer where I'm looking at my watch, seeing if they're going to respond. And I give them lots and lots of time because it takes, you know, depending on the severity of the brain injury, it could take a long time to generate enough of like the neural connections to really understand what this person just said to me, that I need to respond. And then I need to like listen again if that's not the response I want, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah.
And when you,
so,
that's very impressive with AAC. Wow, let's just be honest. Now I'm going to tell everyone the powerful use of the AAC is need to be, and then there's evidence-based practice that evaluates this positive outcome. So take notes.
Yeah, totally. And we have seen this, you know, I've seen kids who haven't had any form of communication for years. I'm talking, I 11 years have had no ability to make choices, nothing. When we start as a speech pathologist who's trained in AAC, I come in, I look at the child, I see if there's any points of movement. If they have no movements, maybe we'll use an eye tracking system for them. If that doesn't work, we have some really cool devices that we use to put on different parts of their skin that might have neuro impulses. So they could really just activate little muscle twitches and really, you know, it's amazing. I think the forefather for all AAC is definitely Stephen Hawking. Every time I try to explain to someone what I do, I said, have you ever seen what Stephen Hawking did? Because I think it's so powerful.
It is, definitely. It is so powerful. And it's, let's be honest, that name or his movement is never going to die out. So it's something that even if they haven't, recently, they're going to be able to obtain that information and then relate to it, and it's a very powerful source that has been taught for generations.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just so, you know, when the movie came out, the most recent movie that came out about him, I was so moved by the fact that they incorporated all the AAC into the movie because, really, towards the end of his life, he had a customized, I think it was Intel system that, you know, he created obviously and they created with him caveat, and it really was a language system which he was given auditory prompts so he could hear slight sounds in his ears of what the system was saying. It would scan through a sequence of sounds just like I was kind of mentioning with the flip book in the hospital. It's a very similar concept. It was scanning through a list of sounds and he would select by making a little muscle twitch, and then it would activate a voice output of whatever the message he was saying. And with increased competency, you could really start to do these things really fast. And he had amazing competency with his device, and it changed. It was a bit like what we talked about. It was very different from when he started using AAC to when he, you know, had passed away. There was lots of different changes in his language systems. I know at one point he used predictive language where, you know, the more common phrases would come up faster. He had rogue phrases, quick phrases. So I think he was a really powerful example for the AAC community, and someone that I really, really respect. And I appreciate so much how much of an advocate he was for augmentative and alternative communication for my patients I see and kids I see now.
And isn't it amazing? I mean, obviously your perspective is going to be different than mine. But when you see individuals either you've known or have got the chance to meet or even not really get that much involved with, but see them not only progressing at such a fast pace, but also using their ability to make a difference.
Oh, my God. It's so nice. I mean, the advocacy is wonderful. There's some great organizations out there. There's one organization I really, you know, I work with mostly kids, so I'm obviously slightly biased to the child nonprofits, but there's one called Holton's Heroes, which helps fund devices for children. There's another one called Benjamin's Toys that take, you know, typical, you know, toy that you would see and adapt it for a child that has motor limitations. You know, it's just wonderful, like all the different advocacy and things that are going on, the things that I see. And, you know, it's not like we're in this alone, you know. And I think that's kind of what the point of your podcast is, your show is also. It's like you're not in this alone. There's so many people out there and so many families who have been affected by brain injury, and there's so many people who want to help and, like, give their lives to help this cause. And, you know, I'm grateful to be part of this community.
And it's amazing, not only, like I said, not only what you do, but also, and this goes also with body language and verbal tone, you can tell your passion behind it. You're not just doing something because it's just happened to unfold properly. It's something that you're passionate about, you're dominant with, and that you really enjoy the line of work. Not only the activities and the patients you get to get involved with, but most importantly, the end result and the continuing ripple effect that you are making take place. Not just the material, and a lot of people believe that the business is what makes the person, but let's be honest, it's what the person does that makes the business, and your line of work is being made because of your passion behind the wheel. So thank you, Rebecca, for all you do and the lives that you are really changing.
Thank you. No, I really think I appreciate that, and I really am so impressed with the families and those who are really trying to make it better for themselves. And you know, I've learned a lot about this whole AAC movement and the world of AAC. And there's so much community out there. I love there's so many Facebook pages. There is all these Instagram accounts. There's different blogs I follow. There's conferences. So there's great conferences. There's the two main, there's a few, but the major ones that we go to are Closing the Gap, which brings together all the alternative technologies, and it's awesome to see. You know, we just were doing a big art show with the kids that I work with, and they're using all different types of alternative art to create art for the show. So we have a program that we're using on the Tobii Dynavox, which is a type of hardware that tracks your eyes, and kids are creating Jackson Pollock art pieces by scanning throughout all over the device and picking colors. And you know, they're not moving at all. All they're using is their eyes, and they're creating art. And, like, it's so amazing to see the different alternative technologies out there. We have kids that are using switches. So I'm sure have you seen anyone use switches before in any of your rehabs or anything?
Possibly. Describe the switches to me.
Yeah, okay. So basically, when we have someone who has a motor impairment, we try one form of technology. What we will try to do or use is a different switch site. So we'll look to see where there's most movement. I'm just going to use examples of some of the kids that I've worked with in the past because it's easier for me.
Perfect.
But I have a child who really can't use much. She has really hard time with her limbs. She really can only use her head. So we have two little switches set up on the sides of her head. So one switch she'll use to scan through her language software on her device, her high-tech speech generating device, and the other switch she'll use to select the cell she wants so she could really create messages. I have one kid that I've worked with in the past who has had a switch by her wrist and another one by her foot. I've had kids who have one switch where, you know, they're kind of listening, kind of with Stephen Hawking, that they listen for the choices, and then when they hear they want, they select it. That would be a time switch scanning because they're basically on the timer of a software. But with the two switches, we're looking to create something that's untimed that they can kind of scan and select through themselves. But we've put the switches everywhere, heads, shoulders, elbows, knees, toes, wherever. We have little finger switches. We have something called a proximity switch. So we have a gravity switch. So if the person kind of just moves a little towards the switch, it will activate. They don't actually have to hit a switch for it to activate. We have all different types of switches. And and a speech pathologist trained in AAC will help kind of create and figure out a plan for switch site use. And we do a lot of different games and like fun things on the computer to get this a lot of fluency with the switches because it does require a lot of practice, especially for those who have motor movements. Yeah. So I hope that wasn't too much.
No, it's not too much at all. I mean, that's great. Don't get me wrong. That's great not only with the line of work behind it and the examples you gave, but how powerful that is on giving two different perceptions and two different processes and really making them process the information correctly, but most importantly, but it fits their environment, just like with the laser and the lenses having the words.
Yeah, totally. It's finding something that they could work for them, you know, and if it's like potentially having it mounted to a chair or, you know, I'll talk about one piece of alternative technology I'm really interested in. There is something called an OB. It's now actually got recently funded, approved to be under the, I think, the VMA, the Veterans. Sorry, I had a brain
fail
there.
Yeah, VMA. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, VMA, Veteran. Yeah, so now they're like an approved vendor for them. So basically what it is it's a self-feeding tool. It looks like a robot. It sits on top of a table, and there's two switches on it, which can be the switches can be positioned wherever the person has motor movement. So let's say they can only move their knees. So maybe you'll have two switches on each side of their knees. They could use one switch to, you know, move the little spoon around the tray to figure out where they want, you know, what type of food they want from their tray. And the other spoon they will use to bring the spoon to their mouth. Sorry, the other switch
right.
they use to bring a spoon to their mouth. And how amazing is that? You don't have to sit at a table
wow.
with someone feeding you, you know, you could have your food in front of you and you don't have to have someone sitting there feeding you. Like how much more, you know, how much more independence is that than having, you know, your nurse or an aide or a family member sitting at a dinner table with you feeding you so you can enjoy the meal with your family, you know, like there's so many different types of cool technology out there. And so we're really in a cool age
I
for
agree.
This kind of stuff.
Exactly. And let's be honest, you know, not only with technology is on the continuous uprise of adapting
mm-hmm.
and more new techniques being used, but just like how you stated, with the generation that is being able to adapt with it right now, is very,
mm-hmm.
very, very supportive for not only each individual, but also whatever their needs or wants are, especially with during rehabilitation.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome to see how much stuff is out there. And like, in terms of all this stuff, it's like, you know, this is one form of communication. We're looking at generating language systems, software for people who may not have verbal speech, but there's also, you know, different systems for those who maybe have lost their vision. Speech pathologists look at that. So we're looking at maybe different types of braille systems or types of alternative technology for that or hearing. I found these really cool glasses that I was looking at recently that I had a demo of that basically they will scan the environment for you and kind of tell you what's in front of you. It's like a lot of augmentative reality. It's like there's a white table in front of you. You know, there's a coffee machine to your right. There is so many cool things and so many different types of alternative technology out there. And I think it's really, really, really cool to be a part of this kind of growing community and, you know, advocate, and it's awesome. So.
Yeah, oh yeah. And let's be honest, it's going to continue to unfold more and more, but especially when you have individuals like yourself behind the wheel and using their own passion to really adapt to their own personal environment and have it thrive much more than was ever the thinking process before. That's what's going to be something that needs to happen.
Yeah, totally. So
and
a
so
lot of what I do.
Yeah, that's amazing what you do, the lives you change, the families you meet, the patients you meet, and most importantly, the long-term relationships you make because of, once again, you using a passion behind it, enjoying what you do instead of, okay, I'm just going to give each person a limited amount of me and more of the unit, and that's it's not about a positive outcome, but you are being a very positive aspect, not only during the beginning, the middle, and, of course, the long-term steps of their recovery. And I know I've been asking you a series of questions. We've been covering over your material. Is there any questions that you might have for me? If not, it's fine.
Yeah,
I just wanted to ask if you did.
do you kind of, like, I guess sometimes I'm not really sure if everyone really follows what I'm saying, because I think it's sometimes so niche. And if there's anything else you're more interested in knowing about or understanding, I'm happy to go into more detail.
I think honestly, it's been an amazing talk. It's been amazing information that you shared. It's been amazing tools, examples, and most importantly, the series of examples and the different contents that were covered provided a very perfect and powerful visual of what can happen, how to use it, and how important it is to make sure that this is done properly.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
so
well, I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for not only taking time out of your busy schedule, but giving this of opportunity for our listeners and followers to really learn the powerful of what exactly speechologists really do, the lives that they change, and of course the beneficial tools that can be used not only for a survivor but in a certain environment, but being able to adapt them for a survivor to succeed in their personal environment.
Oh, of course. And I'm always happy to be in the forefront of anything. So if anyone has any questions or they want to know more information about what I spoke about, please send me a message.
Oh, I will.
I'm
definitely. We're
going to
keep in touch, Rebecca. Yeah, we're going to keep in touch.
Not
only we're going to get more involved. This is just the start, but we're going to have a very powerful long-term relationship, not only of both of our survivor groups, you know, communicating with each other. I'll send people your way, caregivers, even if they have questions, but also we're going to be a very powerful, positive forum that's really going to help educate and inspire and spread a large spread of hope.
Good. James, what are some, like, of your favorite blogs, sites? What do you like to kind of turn to for more, like, for up-to-date information in the field or support? What are your top things that you like to look at?
Yeah, for support, you know, I would just honestly, I would just Google. Obviously, you know, it's like Google's like Walmart. If they don't have it, you don't need it. But this is just the concept. You know, I will search engine. I will look at different, you know, brain injury facts, brain injury updates, brain injury research. And sometimes I won't even have the title be brain injury. Majority of the time. Excuse me. I'll do a mixture. I'll do brain injury or I'll do brain discovery, brain techniques, brain therapeutic research. So it's obviously not only a lot of reading, but what I have learned, and I'm sure you can relate to this because this happens a lot in school, it's a different attention span, at least I've learned, that when we have to read something we enjoy or have some sort of an interest in compared to why are we reading this. Yeah, it's not a very long momentary, but when I find that, like I said, it can just be brain injury or brain research, science discoveries, cognitive boost, techniques, I mean, anything that relates with the brain, either injured or not, it really helps me not only obtain information for myself, but also information to say, to share on the social media world. I mean, there was one, for example, and I know you'll love this. It was in the University of Buffalo, and they've been studying male and female brains for centuries, of course, as you know. But this one was a huge outreach of why women's brains have higher cognitive skills, better attention span, are more active, and of course the key element are always right, is because that a female brain is 4 years younger than a men's brain. So that's why when we develop men's, we always say, is my wife here? Oh, hey, why don't you ask her? I think she might have better answers, because we're letting you guys know. Of course you have.
Interesting. That's awesome. Well, I mean, it's always interesting to hear where people get their information from and their research. I typically get a lot of my information from American Speech and Hearing Association. They have
Very interesting,
great content. So if you ever are looking for cognitive research, communication research, or anyone else's, I suggest you go there and look up. I just recently read a study that came out on the effects of having small group instruction for children with brain injury and this, how that turned out in the study and the design and plan for that. So it's a really good website. So check it out.
I definitely will. Wow. Well, I just want to thank you once again, Rebecca, not only for your inspirational guidance, But taking time out of your busy schedule once again to share your key elements and personal experience and methods that you use on a daily basis that is impacting families and also survivors' lives, short-term and most important, long-term, to help them get what they need, how they want it, and most importantly, adapt with it.
Awesome. Thank you. This is an awesome, awesome network, and I'm really, really grateful to be a part of it. So thanks for asking me to come on.
No problem. Thanks for reaching out. And like I said, this is just going to be the start of a really good long-term relationship. We're going to work together to make lives better, and I'm very excited about it.
Awesome, James. Have a great rest of your Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Hey, you too. Have a great rest of the night. Get some good rest, and thank you once again for all you do and are.
All right, have a good night. Bye, everybody.
Wow, guys. What an amazing show from Miss Rebecca Taskin, who, like I said, is a licensed, and I'm sure you could tell, a licensed New York City-based speech and language pathologist that is assisting children ages 5 through 21 with severe traumatic brain injuries. So if you want to keep lined up, we've got some amazing shows coming up, not only the first, third, and fifth Monday of every month like always, but we've also got some amazing outreaches lined up with Harley Davidson, ESPN, and other companies that have been reaching out to us. So make sure to follow us on all forms of social media. Stay sharing our information that we create and post up or follow on a daily basis. And most importantly, visit tbionelove.org and stay tuned with the information that we share that can be used with you or for others to help them think, be, and live positively successful. Hope you guys are having a great Mindful March. Make sure to tag TBI One Love and what you share, because together we can be the positive change and share a positive form of hope, inspiration, education, awareness, and most importantly, prevention. Have a great night. Let's keep working together to make lives better. One love.